momentarily white out his auto-senses. Hot blood spattered his armour and smoke billowed around him. As his auto-senses cleared, Torgon turned away from the blazing crater that was all that remained of his assailants. He was in time to see the crimson beam of a mining laser reach out from the top of the haloed stair and spear clean through Unktor's helm. The Imperial fist stiffened, his last few bolt shells flying wide to blow apart a statue of Governor Callistus, then collapsed, all but decapitated.
"Thrown!"
snarled Torgon, and snapped off a volley at the handful of cultists at the top of the stair. One shot took the laser wielder in the gut and blew him to pieces, but his comrades vanished through the doorway and out of sight. Torgon didn't waste time checking on Unktor. His brother was dead, and the time for mourning and the extraction of gene seed would come later. For now, the atrium's flickering lumen and the building sense of pressure behind Torgon's eyes suggested that the sending had begun. He had to eliminate the insurgent attackers and ensure that the ritual could be completed. Torgon ran across the atrium and took the haloed stair two steps at a time, reloading his bolter as he went.
"Brothers, report!"
he spat into the vox. "Contact, Brother Sergeant," replied Brother Victus. "Insurgents, pushing in from three directions. I am covering the south entrance to the Sanctum Annex, Garum the east, and a complement of Sanctum Guard have the west."
"Brother Jeshur?"
asked Torgon, pounding down another richly appointed corridor scattered with the corpses of Sanctum Guard and insurgents.
"Incapacitated. Insurgent with an industrial sword disemboweled him, Brother Sergeant."
Torgon cursed silently.
"Hold them, brother. I am 30 seconds out," he said.
"In Dawn's name, Brother Sergeant," replied Victus, and cut the link.
Torgon burst into the next chamber, a shrine to the Imperial faith illuminated by hundreds of flickering candles. He almost ploughed headlong into a pair of insurgents who were manhandling a heavy metal case stamped with a serpentine spiral design. The first fell to Torgon's clenched gauntlet, the punch snapping the heretic's neck. As the carved chest clanged to the flagstones, the second insurgent drew an auto-pistol and unloaded it point-blank into Torgon's faceplate. White-hot pain flooded the sergeant's skull as a lucky shot found his eye lens and punched into his skull. Pain blockers flooded his system. Runes flashed madly. Torgon staggered, snarling, registering that he could now see only through his right eye. Blood drizzled inside his faceplate. He tasted it on his lips. The insurgent's features twisted in a triumphant leer.
"Meet your doom, oppressors!"
he screamed.
"I shall leave that to you,"
spat Torgon, and shot the cultist through the head. More blood sprayed, dousing the nearby candles. Torgon spared the carved chest a glance. A fresh surge of alarm pierced his haze of pain and disorientation.
"That is a demolition charge, big enough to bring down a spire," he breathed.
There was no time to render its machine spirits inactive. He would have to hope that slaying the weapon's operators had been enough for now. Torgon pressed on, feeling the tight pain of his hyper-efficient blood clotting around his grievous head wound. The bullet was lodged somewhere behind what remained of his left eye, and had no doubt inflicted damage to his cortex. But his post-human anatomy was compensating as best it could. He was an Imperial fist, he reminded himself, as waves of nausea and dizziness flitted through his body. He was built to endure when all else failed. It would take more than some heretic's bullet lodged in his skull to slow Larus Torgon. Another corridor, another chamber. This one a ritual meditation space meant for the astropaths to ready themselves in. Its calm serenity was spoiled by the bloody bodies strewn across its broken furnishings, the bullet holes and las burns in its walls, and the cacophony of gunfire that rang from the half-open brass doors on its far side. The lumen flickered again. Torgon tasted bitter iron, then something so sweet as to be rotten. He smelled fresh-cut grass, mingled with promethium fumes, and heard snatches of something that might have been laughter, but might also have been hysterical screaming. Brain damage? Psychic phenomena? Something of both? He did not have time to decipher. Instead, Torgon shouldered open the door to the Sanctum Annex and plunged into the war zone beyond. The annex was, in truth, a corridor of substantial width and ornate decoration that encircled the astropathic sanctum at ground level. Several doorways led into it from different directions, and it seemed likely that the enemy had flanked the annex and attacked through all three. However, they would all be converging on the single doorway to the sanctum proper, a 30-foot-high slab of bronze-chased adamantine currently out of sight to Torgon around the curve of the annex. The corridor was a ruin. Its rich crimson carpets were blood-drenched and, in places, ablaze. Its thick, armoured inner walls were marred by lasburns and spattered with more blood. Several of the stained-glass windows set near the ceiling had been cracked by gunfire, and a mixture of freezing air and diamond-hard light spilled through. As Torgon emerged, he saw insurgents to his left, their backs to him, as they pressed the attack on the sanctum door.
"For the Emperor!"
he bellowed, and unloaded his bolter into them. With his maimed vision, Torgon's accuracy was not what it should have been, and several of his bolts flew wide. Several more found their mark, however, and cultists exploded in puffs of gore.
"Brother Sergeant, make haste!"
Vox's brother Victus.
"There is a psycho with them, I...
Victus's transmission cut out, and Torgon's face drew down into a scowl of fury. To unleash witchery here, while the sending was in progress, was recklessness of the worst sort. Even he knew that much. Torgon stormed forward, his armoured feet pounding against the carpeted flagstones, his bolter barking its wrath. An insurgent came at him with a howling industrial saw, and he shot the mutant down, leaping over the spinning blades of the weapon as it spilled from nerveless fingers. Landing, he put bolts into two more insurgents, then swept past several wounded members of the Sanctum Guard, who stared at him with wild eyes. A door to Torgon's left burst open, and more cultists poured through it, autocuns blazing. He took the shots on his shoulder guard and flung a frag grenade into his enemy's midst. It detonated with a loud bang and flung shredded bodies through the air. The Sanctum's door came into view. The air was heavy with the thunderstorm tension of the sending beyond, everything crawling with a kind of greasy electric tingle. Torgon took in Brother Jashor, slumped against the Sanctum's door, holding his guts in with one hand and firing a bolt pistol with his other. He saw Brother Victus standing over his comrade, bolter hammering. Brother Garum lay nearby, his plasma gun inches from his open gauntlet, his armour riddled with dozens of bullet holes. A handful of Sanctum guards were kneeling around them, firing their lasguns desperately. They were using their own dead for cover. Beyond them, a statue had been toppled to form a makeshift barricade. A couple of dozen insurgents crouched behind it, filling the air with gunfire. Torgon saw her in their midst, the psyker that Victus had warned of. Her dark eyes gleamed like pools. Her stave was raised, and unnatural forces were shimmering from it to further shield her comrades from the Loyalists' fire. Torgon didn't slow. He levelled his bolter at the psyker and let fly. His bolts tore through the air and detonated against her shield, hard enough to blast her off her feet. The cultists let out an enraged howl and surged over their barricade in a seething mass.
"Fight!"
roared Torgon.
"Do not let them through! Fight for the Emperor! Fight for Dawn!"
Autoguns and lasguns flashed. The corridor was lit by the mad strobe of muzzle flare and flames. An improvised firebomb shattered amidst a knot of Sanctum guards, and they staggered back, screaming and burning, before being picked off by gunshots. Brother Victus waded into the charging cultists, swinging the butt of his gun in brutal arcs. A savage brawl broke out between cultists armed with picks and clubs and the last few Sanctum guards with their las rifles and bayonets. Torgon threw himself into the fight, gun butt swinging and feet lashing out, breaking another insurgent with every blow. He would not let the sending be disrupted. He would not let these heretics win. There could be no defeat, No surrender. Only victory. At any cost. Majus Jai rose to her feet, heart hammering. She was shaking with shock, adrenaline and outrage. She had almost perished. The filthy Imperial oppressor had almost slain her. And in defending herself, she had been forced to stop protecting her brothers and sisters. Now they were dying. Worse, she still couldn't raise Haxis and Jagath. Without their demolition charge, the sanctum could not be destroyed. As it surely must be. Her final attuned psychic senses left her in no doubt as to what was happening beyond the doorway. Even now, she was failing Father in his most vital of tasks.
I will not let them prevail, Father. I promise you,
she hissed.
Victory! At any cost!
It could not be allowed. It would not. Jai was not a military strategist, but even she could see that the arrival of yet another cursed space marine had turned the tables in her enemy's favour. They were veritable monsters, towering armoured behemoths who simply would not die. Her brothers and sisters were spending their lives dearly, but it was the armoured might and firepower of the space marines that would prevail here. Then she had it. Jai focused on the newcomer, the warrior with the shattered faceplate. She raised her stave double-handed and pointed it at him, then called upon every ounce of the power that the Star Children had given her. She sent the full force of their will questing out like a tendril, winding and coiling through the air before it punched deep into the Space Marine's wounded mind. Jai felt resistance like nothing she had ever known. She gritted her teeth and growled deep in her throat as she felt blood spill from her nostrils. It was like trying to force her bare hands through a solid fortress wall. Every moment of pressure more agonizing and unyielding than the one before. Every second promising the terrible snap as she crushed herself against her enemy's mental defenses. He staggered, his helm turning slowly in her direction. His limbs shuddered as he brought his bolt gun up. Its muzzle yawned dark and cavernous amidst the mayhem of the battle. Jai cursed and redoubled her efforts, feeling agony race through her mind as she pushed herself past every sane limit.
I will not fail you!
She gritted out between clenched and blood-flecked teeth.
I will not!
The Space Marine's mental defences collapsed so suddenly that Jai physically staggered forward and thumped into the fallen statue. The sense of release was blessed relief, and she felt a smile twist her mouth as she drove her will deep into the undefended meat of the oppressor's mind. For a moment he staggered as she fumbled, unfamiliar with the psycho-indoctrinated architecture of his thoughts. Then she had him. With a twitch of her mind, Jai swung the barrel of the Space Marine's bolt gun around. With another, she squeezed his trigger. Bolts roared out and splattered the last of the Sanctum Guard across the carpeted floor.
"Feel Father's wrath, filth of the oppressor!"
cried Jai, and her surviving followers gave victorious shouts. The other two Space Marines spun in shock, but they did not fire, still struggling to comprehend just what had happened.
Too slow,
she thought, and squeezed her puppet's trigger again. The bolts flew wide, one clipping the still-standing Space Marine, two more punching the Sanctum's door and blasting craters into its surface. He was still fighting her, she realized. It felt as though she were wrestling with a giant, physically and mentally straining to bend him to her will, terrified that at any moment he would break free with bone-shattering force. It was precipitous, painful, yet somehow exhilarating. The pause had been enough for her surviving brothers and sisters to rally. One unloaded her autogun into the exposed innards of the wounded Space Marine, finishing him off in a gory spray. Three more flung themselves at the last unarmed giant. An energized mining pick hit him in the side of the knee. Autogun rounds stitched his chest plate. A curved blade swept up under his chin. All three of her comrades met a violent demise seconds later, as their blows clanged from the Space Marine's armour. he picked Kolv up by the throat and snapped his neck, before putting bolts into Shurva and Gixness and blowing them apart. Phoenicia Jai screamed, wrenching at her puppet strings. He hurled his gun, end over end, through the air. It struck his brother's helm and staggered the warrior long enough for Jai to achieve her true aim. Her puppet bent down, straightened up, and unleashed the howling fury of his fallen brother's plasma gun.
"You will all pay 1,000 times over for the blood you have spilled," said Jai, and clenched her mind again.
The shot lit the corridor wide. A crackling orb of plasma slammed into the last loyal space marine and burned through his chest plate. White fire burst from his helm's eye lenses. Smoke boiled from the grievous wound in his chest, and he crashed back against the sanctum doors. Jai sent another thought spike, and her puppet pulled the trigger again. Another blast erased his brother's helmed head and sent the remains of his corpse sliding to the floor, the slagged metal of his power armor glowing.
"Damn you, heretic!"
grated the puppet. And she felt fresh pain within her mind as he fought to swing the weapon to bear upon her.
"You are the heretics! You and your monstrous Imperium! The Star Children spit on your corpse, Emperor!"
she snarled, and sent one more thought barb into her enemy's mind. Jai felt exultation and satisfaction as he unwillingly brought the plasma gun up and pressed its white-hot muzzle against the underside of his helm. Smoke rose. Metal melted and drooled. She caught a whiff of cooking flesh and realized that she was holding her victim on the brink, enjoying his searing agony. And why not? How much pain had these monsters inflicted upon her people over hundreds and hundreds of years? Yet she was wasting time, she realized. Every second that passed was longer for the enemy to send out their distress call. Disgusted with herself, Jai twitched her victim's trigger finger. His helmed head vanished in a howl of white light, and his armored body crashed down onto its back with a last spasm. Magus Jai felt the exhilaration of her powers drain away, and suddenly found herself leaning on her stave in exhaustion. Her limbs shook. They were so heavy she could barely lift them. She looked around at her last few warriors, the handful of late arrivals led by Shen, even now spilling into the annex. She wiped blood from her lips with one robed arm and gestured down the corridor.
"Find out what happened to Haxus and Dekath," she croaked. "Bring the charges and get them set, now! We demolish the sanctum with the astropath still inside, and then we retreat."
As her followers rushed to do her bidding, Jai allowed herself to sink down against the statue as exhaustion and frustration washed over her. She felt a knot in the pit of her stomach that was little eased even when her comrades voxed to let her know that they had found the charges and were deploying them. This attack had not gone as it should. She knew that. The Space Marines should have been watching over the Governor, not standing between her and her objective. Father would understand. He would not be angry with her. She was more than a little surprised that she had defeated them at all. Surely they must have grown complacent during their long cycles of inaction. She realized that Father had chosen well his moment to strike. Yet none of that changed the fact that she had been too slow. Perhaps she would still stop the Imperials from forcing their message through. Perhaps it would not get through at all. Perhaps the Star Children's miraculous aid would prevent it. The risk could not be taken. Jai knew that, as would Father, and Lua, and all the rest of them. The Day of Ascension could no longer be delayed. For good or ill, it began here, now. Pride welled within Phoenicia Jai, for she had started the last war that Gaia would ever know. Chapter 3. 1 year, 26 cycles sidereal later. Primaris Epistolary Aster Lyderon felt the Thunderhawk shudder as it punched down through Gaia's atmosphere. It was not a violent motion, for the powerful gunship was built to endure far worse traumas. But Lyderan was a practitioner of geokinesis. Every slight shudder of force or pressure was revealed to his hyper-attuned psychic senses.
"We have broken atmosphere," he said over the vox, addressing Captain Tor and Chaplain Storn, who sat opposite him.
All three were lashed into restraint thrones, helmed and in full armour, as were their honour guard, who took up much of the rest of the Thunderhawk's troop bay. Past the assembled veterans, past the warriors of Tor's command squad, Dreadnought Brother Geshmund completed the formidable assemblage of Imperial fists, packed into the gunship's hold. This was only one craft, amongst the entire strike force, thought Lyderan, with a stirring of pride. It was a magnificent gathering of military might, and he was glad to be a part of it.
"Soon the guns of the Fifth Company shall speak their fury again," intoned Chaplain Storn. "I confess, my brothers, that with all that has transpired, I find my choler surging to the fore with every such opportunity for redress. You speak for us all, brother chaplain. But what foe do we fight here?" asked Captain Tor. "We all heard the report from the Gyrish High Marshal, did we not?" Lyderan said. "Insurgent cells, mutant militias, and massed cultist armies. Heretic turncoats amongst the Gyrish airborne regiments. It is a litany of rebellion that bears all the hallmarks of the Dark God's servants, no?"
"Indeed, and yet I wonder," replied Tor. "You were with me on Shandrak, brother librarian, and on Osmal too. You saw how the Great Rift has gifted the heretic filth the chance to conjure malefic entities more easily. How swollen is the power of the warp craft. You have seen how brazen the fallen traitors have become, marching openly against the Imperium even here within the very segmentum solar. Yet I see nothing of these phenomena in the message that Sergeant Torgon sent us, nor in the words of High Marshal Callistus." Lyderan considered. His captain made a keen observation. Since his emergence from deep beneath the sands of Mars during the Ultima Founding, the librarian had fought in only two combat actions alongside his brother Imperial Fists. Both had been bloody conflicts that saw the Fifth Company evicting heretic forces from entrenched positions on oppressed loyalist worlds.
"I have been guilty of assuming that this engagement would take much the same form as the previous," he confessed. "I will shrive myself with a pain gauntlet at the first opportunity, brother captain, and endeavour to correct my failing. We must know the nature of our enemies if we are to aid the people of this world." "It is understandable, Lyderan," said Chaplain Storn. "This latest chapter of the Long War is all that you have known since you joined our ranks. Things have no doubt changed since you were taken by Kaul in the 36th millennium. We are Imperial Fists. We must strive always to see past the obvious to the truth beyond. Precision is one of our many virtues. One cannot bring low the enemy's fortress if one does not properly perceive its strengths and assess its weaknesses."
"Just so, brother chaplain," replied Lyderan.
"Whoever we face, they have certainly caused both mayhem and destruction," said Captain Tor, scrolling through the runic script displayed on the data slate he held. "The reports the High Marshal transmitted to us speak volumes. Even assuming he has omitted whatever details he feels would undermine the planet's defenders in our eyes," said Lyderan.
"You believe the High Marshal has lied to us?" asked Tor. "Do your powers tell you this, brother?"
"No, brother captain. But the High Marshal is only human, with all the faults and insecurities such a condition brings. He is a loyal servant of the Emperor, who has spent more than a year fighting a desperate war. He has seen duplicity within his own ranks, where he assumed none could fester. He saw our brothers in the Honor Guard struck down to a man on the war's first day. Now the Adeptus Astartes descend upon his world, and he fears our judgment. If his own faith in his people falters, he thinks on some level that ours will also. He is desperate to prevent that, especially if the news about Squad Torgon's death is true.
He fears our judgment will fall upon the innocent and the guilty in equal measure, mused Captain Tor.
Him or Governor Callistus, for whom he speaks, said Lyderan.
Their fears are not unjustified, growled Storn.
A few seats down, Chapter Champion Hastor grunted his agreement.
We cannot pass judgment on every loyal Gyrish servant of the Emperor because of the separatist lunacy of their countrymen, said Lyderan. What if all were complicit, whether through deliberate activity or the sin of laxity in their watch? Challenged Storn. Ignorance is no defence for heresy.
The people of the Imperium are its lifeblood, Lyderan replied.
One does not exsanguinate the patient in order to purge an imbalance of humours.
The people of the Imperium are its garrison, said Storn. All bear the burden of responsibility for its defence. It takes but a handful of traitors to open the postern gate to the foe in the light of dusk, and but a handful more to fail to see the peril until it's too late. Soon enough, the entire fortress has fallen.
Yet what worth has an empty fortress when the garrison is dragged wholesale from their posts and put to death upon the mere fear of laxity?
Asked Apothecary Lourdes, joining his voice to the debate in Lyderan's support.
The point is mute, my brothers, said Captain Tor firmly. This world matters. Its output of ore matters. So say the Departamento Munitorum and the Adeptus Mechanicus, and so agrees Chapter Command. We cannot simply put this world to the torch to purge the risk of heresy, even if we wish to. Its infrastructure must be secured. Its export quotas must be restored with all haste, lest Forge World Shalathrax and the gun shrines of Fodriel and Amasak Ultima fall silent.
We shall have to act decisively to turn the tide, observed Lyderan. Even assuming he has planed off the rough edges, the reports make for bleak reading.
Tor nodded in acknowledgement, paging through his data slate.
Just over a year sidereal since the heretics began their uprising in the name of this being, Father. And in that time, the defenders have lost 2 out of 3 hives.
I imagine they would prefer us to see it as their having successfully held onto the capital city and its attendant mines, said Lyderan.
I am sure they would, said Tor, his tone wry.
The fact is, they are losing this war. Would have lost it very soon had we not arrived.
He punched a series of runes on his data slate, projecting a hollow map of Gaia into the air before him. The image flickered, a hazy green representation of the benighted world rapidly zooming in on its only landmass. Thanks perhaps to its lone nature, it had been named simply the continent. Lyderan could not help but approve the pragmatism. Designator runes appeared across the continent. They marked out the trio of hive cities that formed a rough triangle. Claritos, its northern tip, Mistraka, its southeastern point, and Angelicus, its westernmost. Almost a dozen mining complexes were marked as well, divided between greater and lesser clan ownership, and each reached by armoured highways that stretched from the skirts of Gaia's hives. Those highways were lined with macro-purgation firethrowers, Lyderan knew from their inload briefings. Yet those defences had been ill-maintained since the war's escalation, and now the mines risked being overrun or cut off by the rapacious biofauna of Gaia's deadly mist jungles. Even the planet's hive cities were suspended above the jungle's grasping reach, on immense stilt legs, each several miles in diameter and interlaced with complex strata of supporting struts that had become home to unofficial shantytowns and hive slums in their thousands. As Lyderan understood it, the miners themselves dwelt largely within the lower levels of each hive and used armoured funicular railways to travel up and down the city's legs in order to reach the mist-swathed jungles below. From there, convoys of armoured transports ran the constant gauntlet of predatory fauna along the highways to reach the armoured mineheads themselves.
Hive Claritos,
said Captain Tor, conjuring crimson runes into life around the vast macro city.
Fallen. Half overrun by the jungle below, if reports are to be believed. The remainder is a lawless nest of heresy, from which vox proclamations of secession from the Imperium blare night and day. Not to mention heretical rhetoric exhorting the worship of their father, spat Storn. Hive Mastraka also lost. It is nothing more now than a haunted ruin, said Tor, causing acid green biothreat runes to blossom around the city's icon. The planet's defenders possessed a stockpile of extremist-level biopurgation munitions that were intended for purging the planet's jungles in case of a destabilizing event of just this sort.
A weapon of last resort, no doubt, observed Lyderon.
He considered the collateral damage to the planet's populace and infrastructure that unleashing such weapons would cause, and the immense quantities of rotting biomatter that would be left to contaminate much of the continent in their wake. The alternative would have to be apocalyptic indeed to cast such a choice in a favourable light.
Perhaps the defenders believed it had come to that, or perhaps the insurgents felt possession of these weapons would afford them an unassailable bargaining position, said Tor. What scant information exists in the High Marshal's data inloads suggests a firefight in the storage silo in Hive Mastraka's spire. There was a containment breach, followed by a chain of detonations. Mastraka is a collapsed shell, the jungle pared back to bare bedrock for 50 miles around it in every direction.
Storn shook his head, the skull faceplate of his helm lowered menacingly in the crimson light of the Thunderhawk's bay.
Inexcusable foolishness, he growled. Have we located the enemy's command center yet, brother captain? I would recommend a swift strike upon that location with our entire strength. Show these curs that the Imperial Fists are a new kind of foe to be feared.
Lead by example. Cow them, then press the advantage,
agreed Ancient Tarsen, the company's banner-bearer, from his position in the throne next to Champion Hastor. Shipmaster Gavon has been correlating the High Marshal's data psalms with Orspec scans from the Wrathful's own sensoria, but no. As yet, it has been impossible to determine a centralized locale for our enemy's command headquarters, replied Captain Tor, tilting his head upwards as though to indicate the Imperial Fist strike cruiser that hung far above them in geosynchronous orbit.
Again, the point is mute at this juncture. I do not intend to launch such a preemptive strike. No?
Storn's voice sounded carefully neutral to Lydran's ear. Not for the first time, the librarian wished that he possessed some modicum of the subtler powers many of his brothers exhibited. He could sense the tremor of an increased heartbeat that indicated excitement or anxiety, could read subtle vibrations in the air when a person spoke that gave him some indication of whether they might be weaving falsehoods. But he had longed more than once for the ability to truly read minds. It was why he devoted what time and study he could to understanding the way those around him thought and acted. Both the Adeptus Astartes and the unaugmented humans who made up the majority of the Emperor's servants. Lyderon clove firmly to the belief that insight was as great a weapon as any blade or bolt rifle, and he did his best to hone this addition to his arsenal whenever he could.
The foe hides behind the planet's populace, replied Captain Tor. I am not above making martyrs of those who cannot be cleared from the crossfire, but it is our duty to shield the worlds of the Imperium, not set them thoughtlessly ablaze. Leave such ill-disciplined displays to the flesh-tearers and their ilk. No, I will fight this war like a true son of Dawn, and that means first securing a stronghold from which to operate. We must be thorough, methodical, and above all, we must remember our duty to preserve the infrastructure of this world for the wider Imperial war effort. The strike force will put down at the Mercurio Gate spaceport atop Hive Angelicus. We will coordinate with the planet's defenders and begin by rooting out any insurgent presence within the Hive itself.
You suspect foes lurk amongst the Loyalists? Asked Lyderon.
In a war like this, Brother Librarian, I suspect everyone and everything besides ourselves,
said Tor gravely.
We secure the upper districts of Hive Angelicus and then work outwards from there?
Asked Chaplain Storn.
Just so, replied the captain. Every street, every highway in Maglev and Hablock is to be considered another trench or redoubt in the enemy's defensive network.
We will proceed relentlessly.
Leave no stone unturned, and work outwards and downwards until we are certain that any insurgent presence within the hive has been expunged. I would have naught but loyal servants of the Emperor at my back, and a solid fortress to launch my strikes from before I risk committing to actions within the planet's jungles.
Brother Captain, with respect, is this strategy not overcautious?
Said Lydran.
We could split the strike force, hit half a dozen mine complexes simultaneously, and purge the mutant militias within hours of planetfall. Wrathful could turn its guns upon what remains of Hive Claritos and annihilate it from orbit, and all of the heretics it harbours along with it.
Storn grunted his approval of Lydran's suggestion.
For all your nigh-supernatural empathy, you are a man of direct means, brother, chuckled Captain Tor. In the first instance, we cannot be sure of the enemy presence within those mining complexes. I would have substantially more reconnaissance data collected before I plan assaults against the very sites that make this planet so valuable to the Imperium. Between the onslaught of the jungle and our own blindness to the enemy's strength, I assess the risk of collateral damage and excessive losses to be too great.
Travel through the Imperium was always risky, but we have seen for ourselves the hellish dangers of warp travel in this new age of nightmares. How long would it take, do you think, to successfully divert enough civilian labourers, craftsmen, adepts and the like to repopulate this planet should we slaughter its people? Would any of them even arrive? Or would Gaia be left as a victorious but hollow shell? Gone are the days when the common herd were the Imperium's most expendable resource, if ever they should have been considered thus. As for Hive Claritos, brother, I have fought the Emperor's wars for almost a century and a half. In that time, I have seen good commanders and bad. I have fought alongside heroes, but also been forced to suffer the deeds of zealots and fools. Were Claritos the fortress of some iron warrior's tyrant or green-skin warlord, then I would erase it from on high without a second's hesitation. It is not. It is an imperial hive city. And no matter how overrun and beset it may appear now, if we do our duty, there may come a day when we see that city restored to glorious imperial service.
Even our own chapter was once reduced to but a single warrior, and yet now we are the mightiest of all the Adeptus Astartes,
said Chaplain Storn, sounding thoughtful.
Just so, brother Chaplain, said Captain Tor. If we could be so humbled, and yet arise again to might and service, so too can Claritos Hive. When we destroy our own worlds, slaughter our own people, we do our enemies' work for them.
That is something that we can ill afford in such dark days as these. Lydran picked up the timbre of absolute certainty in Tor's voice. He felt a fierce loyalty to his captain in that moment.
I offered hypotheticals only, brother captain, he said. I agree wholeheartedly.
You are a fine naysmith, replied Tor. Yet you see men's hearts also, do you not, brother librarian? I do wonder if you keep some well of telepathic talent hidden away from us within that labyrinthine mind of yours.
Lydran smiled slightly behind the faceplate of his helm. He held out his hands as though in admission.
I swear on the Primarch himself that is not so. I merely observe and do my best to dig down to the deeper meanings before me, just as skilled sappers must properly undermine a curtain wall before they can bring it down. Only in this way are such insights revealed to me. But there is more to your strategy, Brother Captain. I believe that you see something more at work here. Some hidden influence we do not yet understand. And you are wise enough to avoid plunging headlong into the jaws of a trap.
Just so, said Tor. Something is awry on this world, beyond the obvious.
I will know precisely who we fight, what deity they truly worship, and what advantage their debased faith may afford them. As you said, Brother Chaplain, precision. Let us understand our enemies, that we might weed them out from amongst the common herd they hide behind, and exterminate them the swifter.
And avoid any unpleasant surprises, thought Lydaran.
He remembered little of his existence before Archmagos Call's laboratories, yet he retained echoes enough to know that the galaxy was a far darker place than it had been in the 36th millennium. The battle on Osmal II had very nearly spiraled into catastrophe when their foes revealed previously unguessed prophetic abilities bestowed upon them by their demonic patrons. Captain Tor had shown a newfound caution since that bloody fight. Lydaran would not have been surprised to discover that his friend hoped to find some kind of Xenos worship or techno-cult, or perhaps even honest, if horribly deluded, separatists at work on Gaia instead of Chaos worshippers. Privately, he doubted such was the case. Not with the rift blazing across the skies, not with half the Imperium lost behind an unassailable veil of nightmares, and the remainder fighting the servants of the arch-enemy on every front.
"Let it be thus, then, Brother Captain," intoned Storn. "We shall transform Hive Angelicus into a burning beacon of Imperial righteousness, and in its light the shadowy secrets of our enemies shall be laid bare. Then we smite them." "For the Emperor," said Captain Tor, by way of agreement.
"And for Dawn,"
echoed Lydaran, gripping his forestave tight in his right fist. 13 minutes later, a warning chime sounded through the Thunderhawk's troop bay.
"Commencing final approach upon Mercurio Gate spaceport," came their pilot's voice.
"Ready yourselves, brothers," said Captain Tor,
addressing not only the warriors in his Thunderhawk, but all those aboard the other transport craft and escort gunships swooping down through Gaia's hard blue skies. His words would even reach those warriors still in orbit, Lydaran knew, inspiring them just as much as those committed to the initial landing.
"This is no normal war we go to fight. The enemy are already within our fortifications, duplicitous and well hidden. We shall be besieged from the moment we land, beset by enemies we cannot see until they strike at us from the shadows of their own bastions. Remember your duty. Do not for an instant relax your guard. Trust only your battle brothers. Fight for Dawn and the Emperor!"
"For Dawn and the Emperor!"
came the chorus of replies over the vox. Lydaran felt something hot and proud stir in his breast.
"Parade disembarkation," ordered Tor. "Agent Tarson, unfurl the company banner. We aim to remind our allies that their Imperium is mighty and put righteous fear into our foes."
Tor rose from his restraint throne as the Thunderhawk tilted and the tone of its thrusters climbed to a high roar. Bracing himself and maglocking his boots to the deck, the captain drew his power sword, Sunderer, and adjusted the fall of his cloak so that it spilled down over his shoulder guard. As the Thunderhawk powered in towards the spaceport, its prow optics fed a vidstream into the peripheral vision of every Imperial Fist's autosensors. Lydaran rose and took his place at his captain's left shoulder, Storn to his right. At the same time, he watched the vast towers and armoured spires over the Hive loom ever closer from the corner of his eye. The skies were a cobalt blue, framing the Hive's armoured flanks with their myriad lights, defence turrets and smokestacks. Lydaran noted, with a frown, that other plumes of smoke rose from the lower Hab levels, telltale signs of the damage caused, no doubt, by insurgent attacks. Lower still, he saw the thick mists of Gaia's hidden jungles washing up against the Hive's mountainous foothills, like a softly glowing ocean. Another chime came from the gunship's voxponders, this one an elaborate choral affair. It was followed by a deep and cultured female voice that filled the troop bay with its natural authority.
"Warriors of the Adeptus Astartes, we are Governor Osmindri Elicentris Callistus XXI, and we bid you welcome to our world. May the Emperor's blessings be upon you for your aid in this dark hour."
"Governor Callistus, we bring with us the might and judgment of the Imperium," said Captain Tor, his voice hard. "We will begin the purge of the heretic enemies upon making planetfall. You will place your airborne regiments and our BTs at our disposal, and aid us in whatever fashion we require." If Tor's challenging tone had ruffled the governor, thought Lydran, her response didn't show it. Lydran heard no tremor in her voice, neither of falsehood nor fear. He was impressed. Such a non-reaction from a human was rare indeed.
"Of course, brother Captain Tor. An honor guard shall meet you at the spaceport. All of our military and enforcement resources are at your disposal."
Tor did not respond, and after a moment, a static pop indicated that the link had been cut. Lydran felt a subtle shift in pressure differentials as the Thunderhawk cycled its atmosphere in preparation to open its boarding ramp. The craft shuddered as the pilots brought it in towards the forests of looming towers, las turrets, fuel bowsers, and huge landing pads that was the spaceport. Two more Thunderhawks, several armored transporters, and multiple wings of escorts descended in formation around them. Servo skulls and cargo skiffs flurried like birds put to flight as they scattered from the gunship's flight paths. Ground crews and servitors swarmed towards the chevron-edged landing pad the strike force was descending upon. They jostled with human soldiery in the grey and blue livery of the Gyrish Airborne, the latter forming up into guards of honour at the shouted orders of their superiors. Banners unfurled from the spaceport towers, Imperial aquilas flapping in the bellicose winds of the upper spire, alongside the heraldic crimson spear of Gaia.
"They are doing their best to make an impression of their own," commented Chaplain Storn.
"They will have to dispense with the formalities and genuflection swiftly." "I wish to be about this," said Tor. Cross-referencing Adeptus Arbites action reports and Gyrish Defence Force missives with prime strategic targets, Hive Spire schematics and data prognostication reveals 3 likely sites of cult activity within Hive Spire District, 6 more in the level Primus. As soon as we have debarked, we begin reconnaissance in force and neutralization of any heretical elements discovered. On Lydran's autosensors, a schematic map of the Hive's highest districts flashed with designator runes. An abandoned imperial shrine huddled in the shadow of a larger and more recent cathedral. A confluence of service tunnels 2 levels below the governor's palace. A derelict hangar on the edge of the spaceport itself, designated for a demolition order that had been rescinded without further explicatory notice.
"So close to the seat of power," he breathed,
shocked despite himself.
"Potential sites only. There may be no cult activity within 12 levels of Hive Spire," cautioned Captain Tor. "We leave nothing to chance. This enemy is insidious. Temporary force designations, Prime, Secundus, Tertian. You have your strike coordinates. Chaplain Storn and I shall lead the remainder of the force in securing the spaceport, the Governor's Palace, the Hive's Environmental Control Shrine, and the Conclave Chambers. We work out and down from there."
The Thunderhawk touched down with a heavy thump, settling onto its landing gear as debarkation lumen strobed. There came a sharp hiss of depressurization that caused Ancient Tarsan's banner to tug and flap. Then a bright line of daylight limed the ramp as it began to descend. The huge slab of adamantine and ceramite swung smoothly down on heavy hydraulics, meeting the landing pad with a bang, and Captain Tor strode forward. Noise washed over Lydran as he followed his captain's lead, the pompous notes of a martial band striking up, the cheering of the crowds of well-heeled spire nobles, grand clan representatives, clergy and acolytes who thronged beyond the cordon created by the guards of honour, the howl and whine of powerful engines cycling down, and the heavy hiss and thud of servitors as they lumbered forward to attend the machine spirits of the Space Marines' gunships. Near the base of the ramp, a tall officer with a dark goatee and a subtly wrought bionic right eye waited. Medals festooned the breast of his brocaded uniform, and Lydran guessed that he was enjoying his first sight in person of High Marshal Callistus. The High Marshal kept his expression hard and professional, as he stood ramrod straight and saluted Captain Tor with the sign of the Aquila. Tor returned the greeting with an inclination of his head, and in that moment, Lydran's attuned senses detected a sudden rush of kinetic energy. Instinctively, he grasped for the forces of the warp, his stave crackling with power as he threw up a barrier around himself and his brothers. He was a split second too late. Crimson splashed Lydran's right eye lens. His post-human hearing distinguished, amidst the tumult, the distant crack of a high-powered rifle and, closer, the terrible sound of armour and bone sundering. Before his eyes, Brother Captain Acurius Tor toppled backwards like a felled giant. A neat hole punched through the forehead of his helm, its rear an exploded red ruin. Chapter 4. The mental architecture of the Adeptus Astartes is far superior to that of an unaugmented human. Space Marine's capacity for informational intake, storage, and processing is many times that of even the quickest-witted man or woman of the Imperium. Epistolary Lydoran was thus able to watch High Marshal Callistus's eyes widen and his expression contort in horror, to see the men and women around him stare in confusion, to begin calculating in his mind the angle and trajectory of the sniper's shot, to register the tactical disposition and readiness of his battle brothers to face combat and to maintain the effort of will required to manifest and control the shield of geokinetic energy that he had raised in an attempt to confound the attacker's shot. He was able to do all of this, even as the greater part of his consciousness processed the sight of the only man he called friend die suddenly in front of him.
"Enemy contact! Shots fired! Captain Tor has fallen!"
he barked into the Strike Force Vox channel.
"Apothecary Lourdes, attend the captain!"
He had been too slow. He had failed, Tor. The thoughts chased each other through Lydoran's mind, even as he kept the shield shimmering around himself, around Storn and Lourdes, and ancient Tarsan and champion Hastor.
"Combat dispersal! Secure perimeter and locate sniper!"
snapped Chaplain Storn.
"Escorts, dust off! Establish combat airspace perimeter!"
Engines that had been rumbling down into quiescence now howled anew. Servitors and crew serfs staggered back, some struck by wingtips or landing gear, or caught in blasts of jet wash, as squadrons of Storm Talon gunships thundered back into the sky. Squads of Imperial Fists stormed from their boarding ramps and took up firing positions with bolters and bolt rifles raised. Aggressors strode menacingly out onto the landing pad, scattering frightened citizenry before them. Dreadnoughts stomped behind them, the ancients within their sarcophagi bellowing angry oaths. The combat squad's apothecary, Lourdes, was crouched beside Captain Tor's twitching form. Lydoran already knew what he would say. Even Space Marine physiology couldn't sustain that sort of head wound and remain operational. Lourdes might save the captain's body, but Tor had been neatly trepanned by the shot.
"No brain activity detected," said Lourdes, confirming Lydoran's thoughts with a sweep of his Narthesium scanners. "His humours remain stilled. There is nothing I can do for him. He has already gone."
Panic spread through the crowd like an epidemic as they realised what had happened. Some ducked, casting about as though the assailant might be aiming straight at them. Some fled, making for the edge of the spaceport and the processionals and towers of the hive spire beyond. Others simply stood, in wide-eyed shock, screamed in horror or fell to their knees in prayer. The Gyrish soldiery wavered, some attempting to control the crowd, some swinging their lasguns up and seeking the shooter. Some pushed forward to surround the High Marshal with their bodies, even as the terrified masses surged and shoved at them. Some detached part of Lydoran noted with approval that not a woman or man amongst them attempted to run. The din was tremendous, worsening by the moment. Lydoran looked down at his captain, dead on the boarding ramp, then around at his battle brothers. Though all went helmed and faceless as per their late captain's orders, The librarian thought he felt a shared moment of understanding between them, all the same. With a twist of his mind, he allowed his kinetic shield to collapse. There had been no second shot. One had been enough. He had been too slow. Lydran brushed the self-recrimination aside. Failure merited penance through pain, but never at the expense of combat efficacy. Instead of useless doubt, Lydran embraced the cold fury that welled up inside him at the sight of his fallen friend. That he could use.
High Marshal, control your soldiery. Clear these crowds and establish a perimeter around the spaceport, he boomed,
his vox-amplified voice cutting through the furore. Callistus looked stunned. Whether from shock or at being spoken to in such a manner, Lydran didn't know. The man hesitated, mouth gaping.
Now!
Thundered Lydran, and High Marshal Callistus cringed before turning to obey the librarian's commands.
The assassin will be making good their escape, said Chaplain Storn. They will not succeed, said Lydran,
his anger lending a bladed edge to his words. He switched to the Strike Force command channel.
I am rescinding previous orders. All brothers planetside, divide your strength to reinforce strike designations Primus, Secundus, and Tertian. Combat advance on all sites. Rouse your auspexes, brothers, and seek out the cowardly vermin that gunned down Captain Tor. Shipmaster Gavorn, beseech the wrathful sensor banks to aid our search. The enemy will not make us look weak at the very moment of our arrival.
Lydran realized Storn, Tarson, Lourdes, and Hastor were all looking at him.
Do you not concur, brothers?
He asked.
It is Chaplain Storn's right to command, for he is most veteran, said Champion Hastor. We must act with swift decision, added Tarson,
though Lydran could not tell whether the ancient spoke in support of himself or Hastor.
We must answer this insult with uncompromising wrath, said Storn,
and in his gravelly voice Lydran heard an echo of his own outrage.
Epistolary Lydran, I concur. We follow your commands. Brother Chaplain?
Asked Champion Hastor, his voice tinged with surprise and anger.
Our enemy is insidious in nature, heretical in thought and deed. This much Brother Captain Tor suspected and confided to me. To battle such a foe requires keen insight and empiric abilities of our own. Epistolary Lydran possesses both. And yet those very powers were not enough to save the brother captain's life,
Hastor retorted, his words swelling to a heated shout.
An omission that I am sure Lydran will shrive himself for, and never allow to happen again,
Storn growled.
Meanwhile, Chapter Champion, you persist in challenging the decisions of the very officer whose operational authority you are so quick to assert. Now, shall we argue like fools in front of the people of this world at a moment when we most need to show strength? Or will you steel your tongue and honour your Primarch through deeds?
Hastor bristled. Lydran felt the rapid thumping of the champion's twin hearts as he fought to control his anger. Storn made a show of taking Hastor's silence as acquiescence and pressed on.
Gavorn, furnish us with an Emperor's eye view. Where are the cowards lurking?
He asked over his vox.
Shipboard cogitators have triangulated the origin of the shot to the venting towers on the western edge of the spaceport,
came the voice of Shipmaster Gavorn.
Retrotemporal auspex augury reveals a single contact moving away from the site at speed. Repelling line, or possibly a grav chute, will allow them to reach ground level, at which point they will take to a light vehicle of some sort.
Do you have their current location?
Asked Lydran. Around him, the warriors and war engines of Strike Force Tor were surging into motion, forming up and moving out as the surging crowds fled before them. Lydran didn't need empathic powers to feel their outrage. Their shared anger roused into a deadly storm. Their foes had no idea what terrors they had unleashed upon themselves with that single shot.
Confirmed, Brother Librarian. Inloading to your auto-sensors now, replied the shipmaster.
A flashing crimson rune appeared in Lydoran's field of vision. With a blink click, he brought up a schematic map of Hive Spire and saw that the sniper was moving fast along the Angelicum Prime processional.
They are making for the towers of the Spire Corps, said Lourdes, consulting the same data. Logic suggests they have a route of egress there.
No, said Lydoran simply.
Brothers, lead the assault forces to the locations and purge all cultists you find. I will deal with the sniper.
By yourself? Asked Apothecary Lourdes.
I am sufficient, said Lydoran,
certain that his battle brothers would not require his perceptive abilities to hear the need for vengeance in his voice. This act of atonement fell to him alone.
Even with your Primaris physique, you will not catch them on foot, said Storn.
No, said Lydoran again,
and dispatched a runic summons. A moment later, the roar of powerful engines filled the air, and an outrider sergeant skidded his bike to a halt beside the Thunderhawk's ramp.
Sergeant Ulus, will you permit me your steed? Asked Lydoran.
The outrider slammed one fist against his chestplate and slid from his saddle. Maglocking his forestave to his back, Lydoran took the sergeant's place.
My thanks, brother, he said, and gunned the Primaris bike's throttle.
He felt the sleek vehicle surge beneath him, and then he was speeding out along the cargo way through the scattering remnants of the formerly jubilant crowds. Landing pads, fuel bowsers, and towers flashed past on either side, and his brothers receded behind him.
Catch them, Lydoran! Make an example of them! For your sake and ours!
Came Chaplain Storn's voice on a private channel, as Lydoran sped towards the arched gates of the spaceport, the elegant towers of Hive Spire rearing high above him.
I will, Brother Chaplain. For Tor, he replied,
then cut the link and concentrated upon the flashing crimson rune